by G.P. and Amelia as they were going along, but it was actually written by, do you know who actually wrote the book, Last Flight? I believe her first name was Helen. I have it in the...
It wasn't Studer.
No, it wasn't Clara Studer.
Yeah.
You know Clara Studer?
Oh, yes. Yes.
Okay. Is she still alive?
No, I think she died last summer.
She'd gone to Italy the last I heard. Mm.
I don't know because I didn't know her. And
she was quite a person. Quite a person.
Well, so many of those early girls were poorly girls.
Yes, yes.
They were very famous.
I think the very first talk that I was asked to give was to Zonas and San Jose.
Exactly.
And the last one was last year down at Salinas.
Oh, for heaven's
sake. And that's when they gave me a beautiful silver medallion.
Well, I have presented the Amelia Earhart medal, you know, the one that's done by Brenda Putnam.
Brenda Putnam,
yes.
I have presented those all around the world.
Is that the one that I have then? It has the world in the back of it and the lines, the trips that she'd made?
No. This was the first one.
Well, tea if you have it.
Tea
is all right.
We'll go. Coffee, tea, milk.
I think I like mine iced.
Coffee if you have it. Just instant suits me.
Iced tea would be fine. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't know. Anything that's left over? Okay, whatever.
Well.
Some place in my record I have all these dates, but I cannot remember.
Well, you're a 99.
Yeah.
Do you know that you 99 should credit your name to me because I refused to join in the beginning and there were 99 acceptances. So now just think, if I'd accepted you'd have had to have a different name.
You would have been the 100th. Is that
it? And that wouldn't have been a very nice name for her.
Well, I don't know.
Well, I was not in an area where I wasn't when she organized the 99s. I was not flying. I had to wait till I got out of college and earned my own money to learn how to fly.
But you see, I had retired entirely.
Ursula Hettinger Bueller, who is the fixed-wing chief of Swiss Air Rescue.
Oh, is that so? Well, during World War II, I did search and rescue.
Did you?
On the border between Canada and New York State.
Oh. Well, she has more hours in a Learjet than any other woman.
Oh, I've never flown a jet.
And taught herself, because her father didn't want her to fly.
Yeah, that's mine.
She went out and learned on her own.
Well, I learned on my own, too, and I had a heck of a time learning, because women were not very popular around airports. And I spent more money in instruction and never even was allowed to solo until I said, well, this has to quit. So I bought my own airplane, and then I couldn't fly it, but didn't make any difference. I had a friend who she was a little whiz, I'll tell you, of a pilot. I learned more from her than I did from any man instructor I had. And so she was trying to get into the WASP. And this was in the very early beginning. And she wasn't quite tall enough. And her eyes were not so.
How tall did you have to be?
Well, I don't remember now. You see, I'm no good at figures and numbers. But anyway, her father didn't want her to fly. He wanted her to go to school, and she quit school because she wanted to fly. And then so he kicked her out of the house, and she was working for a fixed base operator. And then we... So when I decided that it dawned on me what the trouble was, that I could never get a chance to solo. Because every time I called, I was working, and every time I called for an hour or two, well, they said either an instructor was not available or a plane wasn't available. So I fiddled around with that for a long time before, you know, slow on the uptake. And I just couldn't realize that it was being done. But when I realized it, then I says, I'll fix that. So I bought my own airplane. And you probably never heard of the thing. It was a rear wind. Did you ever hear of it?
No.
Well, nobody else has either.
Rear wind or tailwind?
Rear wind, W-I-N. And I think they were made in St. Louis.
Rearwind Speedster.
Huh?
Rearwind Speedster.
No, I had the Cloudster.
Cloudster?
Uh-huh. Hmm. That, I think that was made in St. Louis.
Okay. I've heard of the Rearwind.
Have you?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think that was anyway.
Were you in the Wasp venture?
No, no. No, I wouldn't get in the Wasps under Cochran. I should say not.
Oh.
Uh-huh. Oh, I would have if Nancy Love had still had them. But, no.
Did any one of you three ever read, oh, gosh.
Yeah.
From High Point, North Carolina.
Jacqueline's book?
No, in fact, she was the second president in 99, didn't she? She lives. She lives in High Point, North Carolina.
Oh, I don't know.
Oh, she flew the Twin Peaks. She flew the. Huh? Yeah.
Louise Thayer.
Yes, I've met her, but I don't know her personally.
Did you ever read her book?
No.
It was written in 1938 about women flying in the military. It was written in 1938, and it was extremely interesting.
I bet that was. Uh huh. No, I haven't. I always try to get everything I can. I think I have most of the books on the media.
Guys, I was going to get you to. I thought maybe you were in the Wasp, and you'd get Jacqueline to let me interview her.
Yeah. Well, good luck. You wouldn't have any trouble. She's right set for that sort of thing.
She likes it.
Yeah, she loves it.
Well, ladies,
did you ever heard her?
Oh,
I hope you're coming back.
Oh, it's all set.
I don't know.
Take it real quick before you go. It's all set. Come on, we're going to all move over and
have no for
you. It's a kind of thing.
Have you ever heard her make up anything,
right.
Don't you?
No, I have.
Okay.
We're talking.
I'll tell you, she can't
right.
even read.
Let me go my own.
Correctly, that's been written for her.
Yeah, she tries, hon. She tries.
I heard about you too, and all of these famous people that I've been rubbing noses with the last 2 or 3 days. It's going to take a while to get me back under cloud now.
Oh,
wow.
Can I help you
carry
anything?
I'm
going to practice there.
Is that
the song?
And about 5 feet long. They look something like a barracuda, but they're not a barracuda.
This is tape number two, side number two, interview with Linford H. Hines, Lieutenant Commander, retired United States Coast Guard, and he was gunner on the warrant on the Itasca in 1937.
That's good. Tell me stories like that.
But they would catch these fish. Well, we'd buy these lures and pay $1 a piece for them in Honolulu. Well, you'd buy 4 or 5 of them, you'd lose them. Because these big fish would hit them, you know what the devil they were. They'd hit them and they were gone just like that. They'd break the leader on them and everything else. So I got the idea of using shot line. This corset lacing shot line. It's kind of used from a shoulder line throwing gun. It's real. It looks like corset lacing, like a shoestring in other words, only white. And heavier and stronger. So I'd get those and I'd take white manila and comb that out and use the red heart in there to make it look different. And I'd bend it over the hook and they just loved that. And I'd laugh at the other people like Commander Thompson and all that. I'd tell them about it. They'd have these big reels out there, the big surf reels. I used them too, and I didn't like them. And I'd get my fish in every time. They wouldn't. They'd get in that much, a head in that much. But I'd use these leather gloves, cloth on top and leather inside, and I'd get a hit, and I'd start pulling them in. I wouldn't give them a chance to turn around or do anything. I'd just keep pulling them in. And I'd pull them in the boat. But Manny Thompson would sit there and go up like this, and he'd let them and wind them. By the time he'd do that about 10 times, he was all in, and then a shark would get him. A shark or barracuda would cut him off, and that's all you'd get, about a head and not much of him. So I'd say, I got mine in. So we'd got to the fish, got to the ship, I'd have the butcher take care of them. And he'd clean them up, we'd cut them in sections about that long. And then I'd use the 10-gallon milk cans that we had. They'd wash them out when we'd take about 50 of them aboard when we leave there. And I'd have all of them filled up with Una. So when we get in, all these people come down to put a layer on my neck. I'd say, how about some Una? Do you have? They knew damn well I had some Una. Because I'd have it every time when I come in. So I'd give them a big piece of that, about 5 pounds. Well, they're selling for $1.50 a pound out there at that time. And that was high-powered fish, $1.50 a pound.
Do you remember the cook's name with the big belly? The cook?
Yeah, I don't know his name.
He dressed up as a baby when
yeah, I have a picture of him, I think, somewhere.
Yeah, I've probably seen a picture like that.
You know,
is there any way I could talk you into digging any of those old... You don't have any of the old gun plants, books about the old guns or anything at all, do you?
Old gunnery
books?
No, I got rid of most all of that stuff. The only thing I keep is I've got my sword and a few other things, and that's all.
Any way I could talk you into digging out those pictures?
My son has robbed me of all of them, I think.
You think they're all gone?
He's taken a lot of them. But I do have a lot of them in this big book. It's about that thick, with pictures that take you all day long to go through that thing, to pick out the ones from the Pacific. Because I have them from all over Europe.
I would like very much to see your pictures, if you have some from the Pacific in there. Is there any way I could borrow it overnight and study it overnight and bring it back in the morning?
I could go over and get it and see what it is, see what we could have.
I would like to very much. As you can see, pictures are not too plentiful. And sometime you're ever in the San Francisco Bay Area, I'll show you something you've probably never seen. I have almost an hour of movie film taken in those days, back at Howland and Baker of the old Itasca, and perhaps you're even in some of the shots, I don't know. But I have almost an hour of movie film.
When they break the cornerstones of those buildings out there, they'll find my name in all three of them.
Which building? Oh, those down there?
All three of them.
Oh, did you put your...
buildings?
Yeah.
When we laid the cornerstones, every one of us, all the horses signed it. Signed the cornerstone, and they're all in there. So those houses, they put them up so fast. I've never seen houses go up so fast for like, we saw 50 men, I think, ashore. And they were passing the boards to each other like...
what odds would you, if someone fell overboard in that water in the, there, what do you
when
think
When we were putting water overboard?
Huh?
When we were putting water in?
No.
We had a man go overboard then. He got in the way of a bike. And we had about six of those 50 gallons of water. There's 40 gallons of water in those 50-gallon cans, so they'll float. We had them lashed together about 10 feet apart and had them all on the rail. And the rail was broken down just to the bottom. And this fella got in the bite some kind of way. And when all these barrels were going overboard, he dove over with them, and sharks were swimming down there about 12, 15 feet long, all around the ship. You want to see him come out of that water. The boat was waiting to take the line to tow the barrels in. They ran past him, and they pulled him out of there so quick he hardly got wet.
Well, in other words, you wouldn't give anyone in the water much of a chance to last very long.
I was in one of the battles there, going into... I think that was Jarvis. It was either Jarvis or Baker. this narrow section cut through the reef. See, when they're taking manure out of there, guano, the sailing ships blasted this reef about 12, 15 feet through there. We started up through there with a motorboat, towing water, the water with us. And we had a cutter along with us. That's a double-ended boat, pulling boat, so she could go up on the beach with the water. I had the line-throwing gun in there, and when we got into this narrow place, there was a shark and a skate in there, fighting in that narrow place. And we were on top of it. And the tail of the skate come over and hit the engineer. And he said it hit him. I don't believe it did. I think it would have cut him if he did, because the shark was bleeding all over. The water was red there. Whether the skate or the shark was bleeding, but I think the skate was cutting the shark with his tail. And it was a big shark, too, a hell of a big one. And he was, they were both fighting in that little narrow place. I wanted to get out of there. When they were hitting the bottom of the boat, we could hear them underneath the boat. And the engineer, he swore that they hit him because he was sitting on the side to work the engine. And so this flipper come over there. I don't think it did.
Well, you're very sure that the Itasca had 2 551ers and 2 6-pounders, and that it had sound-powered telephones to the pointer, and it had a buzzer from the bridge that the man fired. You could not fire the gun from the
Navy bridge. Used that buzzer, too. It's the same as the Navy. Navy used it on destroyers.
And the batteries were used for ignition, and the batteries were used to light the dials.
To light the dial.
Okay. Now, one thing, when you're standing watch, didn't you have a depth sounder of some kind?
Yeah, we did. Because we couldn't anchor at the islands. We couldn't anchor at any one of them. The only place we could anchor was in Palmyra. And in Palmyra, that was, we could anchor off the lagoon. And once we got into that Palmyra, we were all right. We could get to the right place. You could always anchor there. I used to swim with a doctor there, and a damn big eel come up one day. I never saw such a big eel. I know he must have been that big around, and two big eyes. And we were swimming on top of the surface, was ducking our head under like this, looking at the fish down there at Palmyra. I'd taken a 45 ashore to shoot fish. You'd shoot them in the little pools of water. And we were looking there, watching the fish, and all of a sudden I saw that thing with the big eyes. I wanted to get out of there right away. I knew it must have been an electric eel. He was so big.
Was that Zalk or Nelson?
That was a doctor. What was his name?
Zog?
Hmm?
Zog?
No, I met him in Boston later. He was
Meyer?
Myers. Yeah.
Okay.
That's a place. That's another place too. Excuse me. That's another place. I might tell you about. Anybody tell you about the coconut crabs there?
Oh, Palmyra, yeah.
Palmyra. Oh man, they're the best things I ever tasted.
You really like them.
Hey.
I told him about that. I told Commander Thompson about them when he came on the ship. He said, "Are you kidding me, coconut crabs?" I said, "You know good and well, Commander, I wouldn't kid you." I was on watch and he was standing on the bridge. We were talking. I said, "I wouldn't kid you about that." Well, I went ashore. The Navy, we told the Navy about Palmyra would be an excellent seaplane base. Because it had, there's about 40 islands around that, in that atoll. And inside is a beautiful lagoon. Over here on this side, we'd always land and come up here. But over here was Home Island. And we took the owner down there, and we took Sam Fuller down there, too. He's Major General Sam Fuller now. He was a territorial guard. I told him about these crabs, and after we told the Navy on the last shot, last trip down there, the Navy cleaned up on the coconut crabs. I couldn't find one. Finally, just before I was leaving, I found one. And he ran into an old coconut tree that was laying down, flat, and it was rotten. And he ran inside, and I couldn't get him out, because they get inside, and they get their claws like this. And I couldn't get him to come out, so I set fire to it. Got some dry leaves, and put them in there, and set fire to it, and I cooked him in there. And I finally got him out, and I took him back to the ship in pieces to show Commander Thompson that they did have coconut crabs. And I put it on deck, and you should have seen the movie cameras out there to take pictures of that that dead coconut crab.
I don't remember that in the film. Well, did you know that on the Shoshone, when Weishi Jr. was standing watch one night, he ran her aground and howled.
What, they took her aground?
Yeah.
Yeah, I know that. We and never
luckily they got it off.
We were always damn careful about that.
Wouldn't you use the depth sounder?
The
at
wind
all?
Would come up.
Huh?
You see, all of those islands, Howland, Jarvis, and Baker, it's just like a mountainside coming up like that.
So you don't get any warning.
If you dropped your anchor, well, your depth finder would give you, say, 8, 10 fathoms or 15 fathoms or something like that. You dropped your anchor. When you swung around in the wind, you'd be up on the beach. You wouldn't. So we didn't dare anchor in there. We never did anchor. The only place we'd anchor was at Palmyra.
But you didn't use the depth sounder to make sure you weren't getting too close to the
shore. It wouldn't do you any good in it. What you should do is use a depth finder to make sure you don't get up there.
Yeah.
But I always use the engines. We kept the power on the engines all the time we were in there. We stayed in there overnight. We just keep moving the ship back. She'd drift up toward the beach and you'd move her back. And that way you'd keep her from running gone.
Okay. You remember the Tasco was making smoke as a signal for
Yes. Yes, you could see that smoke. Do you get a picture of that? Boy, that smoke was, you could cut it with a knife. It was so heavy. But we were trying to get her to see it. We told her, I heard the radio man, I was on the beach at the time, and they said, we're making heavy smoke. You should be able to see it. Or something, words to that effect, anyway. And she said, I can't see any smoke. She answered that.
Unfortunately, the smoke, if you remember, just went and laid
it went
on
right down to the surface.
It didn't go up.
Well, it was the way the wind was blowing. There was very little wind. You know, when it rains out there, you see a rain coming. And it hit the island and go right around it, just like that. You won't get a drop on the island.
Rain all around it.
Yeah, it go all the way around it, because there's not a tree on the island.
You were a bugler.
I was a bugler in the National Guard when I was 14 years old. And they kicked me out of it when they mustered them for federal service down in Mexico, you know. They kicked me out there. Called a muster and kicked out about 100 of us. It was only 14 or 15 years old.
Do you have any brothers and sisters?
Yeah, I have two brothers. I was a baby there, I think.
Is that your sister?
Yeah, that's my two sisters. They're both alive. My brothers are dead. I was in a smartphone. I had the warrant when I was warned. When I was first married.
That's you as a warrant? Yeah,
as a warrant.
Now that would be about...
See if they made a mistake here? Marrying Judge Wedge Coast Guard Ensign and girl in court.
Now that's 1928.
And the photographers ran right past us, running in the court when somebody got it. We didn't want her old man to find us.
Now let's see, what was her name?
Her name is Dowling, Grace Dowling.
Grace Dowling.
We've only been married a short time, just 48 years now.
And that was 1928.
Yeah.
Where was she living in Honolulu at the time?
No, that's in...
No, I meant when, in 37.
Staten Island.
No, when you... What?
Oh, yeah, she was with me out in Honolulu. She was with me out there. Government houses and...
Well, where would he have this direction finder set up?
We didn't have the houses. I don't know where it would be now.
Well, the other houses were there. They were put up in 36. They were put up in March of 36.
I didn't think they were built at that
time.
Maybe
Remember this gun here?
Yeah.
That
As gunnery officer, were you interested in that at all?
Yeah, they pulled that off of some old wreck there and stuck it out there. Never get out of it, Dan.
What do you mean stuck there for 60 days?
We had to leave the Navy ship down there because she went in dry dock. There's an old picture of me.
This is you?
Yeah.
In the Navy days? Or no, that's postcard.
Yeah, that was World War, right after World War One.
Bugle. I see. You're a bugler.
Imagine this, Commanding Officer Admiral Poteet. This is...
More Samoa.
I don't know whether you ever heard about this, but not I'll tell you about this. We had a Bishop Museum man on there, and he was a very higher up in the Bishop Museum group. He went ashore on one of these islands, I forget the name of the place that we're in, and they always respect the higher up, and he's the honored guest. I've been an honored guest too one time and some more, but this happened there, and they always give the village virgin to that honored guest, and this professor didn't know what the hell to do about it. That was the funniest thing they ever saw about that. There's a Neptune party there we had and on the Itasca. We had Frankie Keller on there too, I think. I don't know whether we've got anything here that's worth anything or not. Look, you go over as the honored guest today instead of me. So I went over and I get in this big parlay, and in, this is across the bay in Samoa. And they got this chief, he sat next to me. He was placed next to me where I went. And I had a chief was placed on my left. And another man, a Samoan, was placed on his right. And we sat together. Well, in those days, I smoked cigars a lot. And I offered this chief a cigar, took it, bit the end off, lit it. He didn't have a match, so I lit it for him. He never said thank you, go to hell, or anything else. I spoke to him two or three times. He said something there, how things are going. They were making what the hell they call that drink? That's out of the root, taro root. Taro root. They were making that in the village. Virgins were squeezing it out, and then this big burly Samoan standing behind him would shake it out like that and hand it back to him, and they'd stick it down and wash it around him in their dirty hands and the sweat running down their arms. I said, me drink that? Then they come around with a half a coconut. There's two village virgins in there. And they, but I'm the honored guest, so they hand it to me first. And I said, what the hell did I do with that? There's a half a coconut full of that shell, full of that damn stuff that they'd been making and shaking this dirty root up. So I just put it up my lips, and it got on my lips, and I tasted, and I handed it back to it. I didn't know I was supposed to throw it over my shoulder like this. I found out later I was supposed to throw it over my shoulder to be up with Samoan etiquette. So this chief didn't say anything. He took his, drank every damn bit of it and like that. And then my talking chief was next. I didn't know he was my talking chief, but I found out later he was supposed to be my talking chief. So everything I wanted to tell the chief, I was supposed to tell my talking chief. And he tells the chief's talking chief. And the chief's talking chief told him. I said, oh, this is a lot of baloney. So I didn't go for that at all. So the chief didn't say a word to me while this whole ceremony was going on. I said, he can go jump in the river as far as I'm concerned. So when it was all over, he said, I guess you think I'm a pretty funny man. I was so surprised to see you speak such perfect English. He said, I guess you think I'm very funny. I said, well, I didn't think that. I said, but I wondered why you wouldn't speak to me, whether you took a dislike. He said, oh, no, not at all. He said, not at all. He said, but I am the chief, and he said, I'm supposed to talk to my talking chief. And he's supposed to talk to your talker chief, and your talker chief tells you what I said. I said, why can't we talk together? He said, well, that's just a Samoan custom. So I said, all right. He stayed with me then for the rest of his time outside with the making fire and everything.
I'll look at these.
These are, they're all from down there on the West Coast. I forget which one he was. He was in.
Who's this gentleman here with the beard?
Oh, that's a Neptune.
Oh, that's a phony beard.
He's fixed up with his leg there. Now, he's a chief radio man. He was on the Itasca.
That isn't Bell Arts.
No, he was on there at the beginning, I think a long time before that. I think he was chief electrician. Oh, wait, he could have been a chief machinist.
Tiny collector of customs.
He was a collector of customs down there. He made several trips with us down there. He got to like it so well, he says, I'll go every chance I get.
Now, is this a fish he caught?
Yeah, that's some of the fish. That's a lure there. That's a lure. Instead of the una, like I was talking about. There's some more Neptune.
Now, here's this fellow with the beard again.
Yeah, he was fixed up. You couldn't see that other leg. He looked like he had just one leg, the way he had it fixed up.
Yeah.
We had a perfect Neptune party in there.
That hat serves the captain.
That's his hat that goes down. He can also come out through the wardrobe.
What's this on the right here? Under the tarp there.
Oh, that's the awning.
That's the awning stretch up. No, I meant this here.
It has the gun here.
Yeah.
And has the awning. That's part of the
And awning. What's this, this gangway here?
And that's the side of the...
At the gangway? Is that where they laid
the
gangway?
Yeah, that's the gangway we'd use when we use a
port.
Horizontal. There's a fish that we found somewhere down there. I don't remember where the hell that was. One of the other.
Hmm.
There's a bones up on the beach.
5 inches right there, the center line, and a 6-pounder there. And you had 3 lifeboats on each side, huh?
Yeah, 2 lifeboats and another boat there.
I see.
On each side. It was six boats altogether.
Do you remember what was just below the bridge here, port and starboard?
Yeah, there's this chart room here.
Down below?
Right here. It was the chart room. This is the bridge here, all the way down to here, and this part would be the chart room.
Well, there wasn't a sick bay in there?
And the radio shack is in between that and the stack.
I think the radio room is aft the stack.
Yeah, it's right along in that section.
It's just behind the bridge.
Yeah, it's behind the bridge, but it's between this section right here. See, the bridge is just so much across of the ship. And then you have this radio shack was in between the stack and the bridge right there, I think.
Okay. You're the lucky one.
When we were having shellback meeting, they voted me to be Neptune, so they couldn't get in trouble with Kenneth. Well, geez, did I have it fixed. I think put a buzzer sitting on the Neptune's throne. I had a buzzer there. And every time we'd tell Frankie Kenneth to kiss the Blarney Stone, he'd put his hand down like this, the Blarney Stone's here, and he'd go like this, not give him a shot with us.
Oh, boy.
And he'd jump up.
All of the decks were wood, huh?
Yeah. Yeah, they wooden decks on it.
Over steel.
That one before, I think.
No, this is a little different in that...
Some of them are the same thing, I think.
All right.
This is all Neptune body stuff.
This kissing the Blarney Stone, is it? No, he's putting his...
This is Tutuila, I know that.
Tutuila.
Yes, Frankie Kenner coming.
That's Kenner coming.
That's kind of Frankie
Kenner. Now, what's the difference?
You use two... you have an alphabet with the semaphore that every signal you use one of... Use both hands on it. Except for A, B, C, A, B, C, and G, H, and I. One hand. You can make them with one hand. But every other letter, you got to make with two hands, you see.
Uh-huh.
But with wigwag, use a Morse code. Use a Morse code, and it's like this. See?
Well, how do you make a dot?
Like that.
Fast. You bring your hand down fast. And a dash, you bring it down and leave it.
It's not in front of you.
You do it to the side.
Yeah.
So if you brought it down real and up real fast, that's a dot. If you brought it down and left it down for a little bit and up, that's a dash.
That's the only difference.
And so that's what wigwagging. Because the guys on the shore said that they got wigwagged when the ship...
Well, lots of people call a semaphore wigwag.
Oh, I see.
And that's what it is. That's fine. All right. Two fives on there.
Is that a five right there?
Yeah, that's five.
Well, let's see. Where are we here? Is this the... This has to be aft, because there's a ladder, and you never have a ladder forward.
Yeah, that... No.
So this has to be aft.
Yeah, this is ladder.
And this is definitely a five-incher up here on the bow?
Yeah. Oh, wait a minute. Wait a minute. Am I getting her mixed up? She did have a 3-inch 50 up here. A 3-inch 50. Now, you know, I've made a mistake. I'm sorry
all right.
about
That's
that.
That's allowed.
I'm sorry about that. I was thinking it was 2 5-inch.
Okay, she had 1 5-inch 50 aft.
5-inch 51.
That was aft on port
aft,
of it.
And then a 3-inch 50 forward, that's where it was.
Okay, and what is it, 3-inch 1?
3-inch 50.
3-inch?
50 AA.
50, that is an anti-aircraft gun, isn't it?
Yes, that'll, you can fire about 85 degrees with that.
On forecastle deck?
Yeah.
Okay, now, so that's a 3-inch 50. That would be 150-inch barrel then.
Yeah, it would be.
It would be 3 times 50, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now, but so you would only have 2 batteries now, aft, back here at the 5-incher.
No, I just have 1 back here. We have the 6-pounders were forward. They were forward.
Yeah.
And it's a 3-incher, not a 5-inch.
Okay.
There. I've had 5-inch on other ships. That's what I'm getting
mixed up with. But how about the fire control system? Could you still...
It still works. All the ships, all the guns on the ship, the main batteries. Now, the 3-inch and the 5-inch would be the main batteries.
Okay.
The 6-pounders are for special purpose. That's for sluting and line throwing.
Okay, but you definitely... The system you described to me to fire the guns, you couldn't fire them from the bridge.
Oh, no.
You had to do it through the buzzer, and they had to do it. And now, where are the batteries? And when I say, I don't mean gun batteries. I mean
underneath the mount here. You're down here. Not you couldn't get to it here. You'd have to take them off down below.
Oh, they're down below deck?
Some of them, some 5-inch have them. But on the iTasker, I think I had them all down below. And some of the 5-inch have a battery right here on the side, just forward of the... pointed. This is the pointed side here.
Uh-huh.
The left side is always the pointed side.
I see.
And the battery box was right here, and it worked with the gun. When the gun turned, it turned with it.
And is that the same size battery that you use down below?
Yeah. Okay. Same thing. Now, some of them have them underneath the mounts.
Okay. How about the 3-incher?
Well, you don't have it on that. That's all manual firing on that. If you use a firing pin. It's no electric firing on a 3-inch. They don't have electric firing like a 5-inch.
So actually, then you only had 1 battery for the 5-incher, except you had 2 of them down below deck.
Sometimes some ships have 2, and I'm not sure whether you had 2 on the ITASC or not, but some of them had 2. One of them is used for lighting, or you can shift it over and use it for firing. And it was put underneath there. And then I've been on another ship where they were put right here, on the side of the mount.
Can you tell them that picture?
Right here, on the side of the mount.
Did the Itasca have them there, or...?
No, I believe the Itascas are underneath.
Okay.
Underneath the...
Now, this says there's 2 3-inch guns. Do you think that's an error?
I think that's an error. I think they're talking about the...
2 6-pounders.
The others. They're talking about the 6-pounders here.
Can you see the 6-pounders there at all? But that is a 3-incher up there on the bow.
Yeah, that's 3-inch here.
And the 6-pounder would be right there, probably
be
under...
on the sides.
Okay.
But just even with the deck house here, mm-hmm. and they have all this passageway around the side of it.
Okay, so correction. Well, 1 5-incher aft, 1 3-incher forward, and 2 6-pounders, one on each side, forward and starboard.
Well, we started heading that way. But what it was, I think she passed pretty close to where the Japs were.